Hello everybody, welcome along and welcome to those online. So in Sydney, we're up to class seven, and we'll begin as we normally do by taking refuge together, generating a mind of enlightenment, saying the other prayers and engaging in the class. Please just feel comfortable in your seat there. Try and ensure that your back is straight and your shoulders are relaxed. And just let your body breathe itself. And feeling the body breathe itself, just relax into awareness. And from within that spacious awareness, imagine the ground beneath you is made of a starry sapphire light, and the space above you is filled with rainbows of offerings. And in the space in front of you, at the level of your eyebrows, sitting on a throne which has cushions of lotus, sun, and moon seat, is sitting Buddha Shakyamuni. He's golden in color, he's wearing the robes of a monk, and he's surrounded by an assembly of other enlightened beings, including Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, deities, and so forth. Meanwhile, on the ground of starry sapphire light, you are surrounded by all sentient beings. Thinking that you're leading all of them in the safe direction of the three rare sublimates, and you're able to do this because you're still alive. And you have the leisure and opportunity to attain whatever spiritual goal you set for yourself. You need to act quickly though, because things change rapidly. There is nothing stable in this world. The things are not quite right. The world does not exist as it seems to. Nevertheless, we have met a spiritual friend. He's been leading us in the safe direction of the three rare sublimates. So, to make our offering of practice as purely as possible, imagine yourself to be as clear as a deity, that your body, speech, and mind have no true existence whatsoever. And as a deity, you're holding a vajra and a bell, and you're sitting within a sphere of great blissful enjoyment. And it's from this sphere of great enjoyment that you recite the refuge prayer. Please join me and say, I go for refuge since I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through the sympathy of the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through the sympathy of the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through the sympathy of the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. In response to this prayer of ours, from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down. And these dissolve in yourself and all living beings surrounding you. Negative karmas and obstructions are purified. They vanish completely. Your health and your lifespan, your virtues and Dharma realizations are increased. And in their increase, have no appearance of true existence. So, cleansed by wisdom and love, you now recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. You decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings into those four states. And to affirm this, you say, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. In response to this wish of ours, from the heart of each enlightened being, let some nectar stream down. And these dissolve into yourself and all living beings. And everyone's negative karma and obstructions are purified. And health and lifespan, virtues and realizations are all increased. So cleanse by wisdom, fortified with love. Exhale and relax. And from that relaxed state of awareness, invite the field for accumulating merit, which appears. And before then, we say, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions, accumulated since the beginning of this time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of psychic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the grace of the merit of life. Now, to prevent ourselves clinging to the merit, it's truly real. Imagine that your ordinary body, speech, and mind, your merits and enjoyments, are utterly transformed through your knowledge of the wisdom of emptiness. And they reappear as the enjoyments of a Buddha world. And you offer this as a pure land to the Buddha, the Lama, and the spiritual entourage. So you say, this ground, anointed with perfumes, strewn with flowers, the dog of death, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as the Lord healed and offered. May all of the beings enjoy this pure land. The offering has been released and the Buddha has accepted it. He smiles and he looks at you. And you meet the gaze of the Buddha and you recollect the wish to definitely emerge from the cycle of samsara. If you want to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of others, and you know that all phenomena which dependently originate are empty of any intrinsic nature. Knowing all this, you aspire to become a Buddha yourself. So induced by your wishes and prayers, there emerges from Guru Buddha a second figure who absorbs into you. And your form clearly becomes that of a Guru Buddha. So radiating from a mum syllable at your heart, light rays strike all sentient beings surrounding you and place them in the state of Guru Buddha. Everyone is now appearing as a Buddha, and everyone has at the heart a moon disc, upon which is a white arc with a marked yellow moon. It's encircled by the mantra, which you begin to recite. And so you say, So hard. So I think now that the two purposes have been achieved, and though this meditation has been one of pure imagination, nevertheless it has imprinted the mind with virtue. But through this virtue, that each of us quickly achieve the state of the Guru Buddha, and place all sentient beings without exception in the very same state. Then breathing in through your nostrils, exhale, and through your nostrils. Okay, so class 7, we've gone through a bit of material. We looked over the last few weeks at lethargy, laxity, mindfulness, and vigilance. We also looked at laziness, scattering, excitement, and distraction. These are some of the faults of the mind. We looked at two major forms of meditation called placement or stabilization, and another meditation called analysis. Much earlier in these teachings, we looked at the posture, and before that, we looked at what meditation is and what the purpose of it is. But today, we're going to be looking at impermanence, and there's two aspects, the gross and the subtle. And what do we do with that knowledge? How do we use it? Now, to present the material, I've relied upon all of these books here. So there's quite a variety here. There's material here on impermanence, of course, but there's also material on the eight worldly concerns, emptiness, and thought transformation. Because all of these come into play when we really talk about impermanence. You can use impermanence in all these different ways, and we'll come to that. Probably the easiest book there to read is How to Practice Dharma, which is a fantastic book by Lama Zopa Rinpoche. Then probably The Foundation of Buddhist Practice. And from there, every other book's about the same. Okay, so let's look at impermanence first of all, from the viewpoint of the teachings on the Four Noble Truths. So as you're probably aware, the truth of dukkha has four attributes. Can anybody remember what the first attribute of the truth of dukkha is?
Suffering.
Ooh.
Oh, no, sorry.
Suffering is one of them. What's another one? Yeah, so impermanence is the very first attribute of suffering. That's good.
Second one, suffering.
That's right. It's unsatisfactory. It's suffering. Suffering, of course, is also empty. I mean, it has no intrinsic nature at all, but it dependently arises. And it is without self. In other words, it has no reified existence. Here, empty and selfless are really coming at it very close to each other, similar thing. So impermanence is the foundational characteristic of conditioned existence. Yeah. And it indicates that everything is subject to, which is subject to causes, will change. It's transient, in other words. So within the truth of suffering, it is taught first, as it is the most accessible entry point. It's funny, so we've talked about this before, I'm not reading it again, but so often we think of the truth of suffering, we think suffering is first. But as we're sitting here, suffering is not too apparent to us, is it? But if we turn the lights off, changes. And as we sit here, change. So change is the most obvious one. So Buddha, bless his heart, kind fellow, teaches the most obvious thing first. Observing that even pleasant experiences are impermanent reveals their unsatisfactory nature. This leads us to the dukkha of change. This direct observation undermines our fundamental grasp of impermanence or belief in permanence, where there isn't actually any. And from this insight into impermanence, especially subtle impermanence, you can go down and end up in the selfless. So one thing can lead you to another. The fact that I remember a few years ago, when you and I were talking, we were talking about impermanence, and I think you even said then how it must lead to emptiness, because there isn't anything that has become impermanent. It's not like this, it's not like that. The South is not like a cup. It sits here like this, and then it falls apart.
Like
yes, even the results.
There are causes for other things that are bad
that's
change
right.
as well.
That's right. So cause and effect, or cause and result, or cause and effect. The fact that the Tibetans use the same name for both of them, because you're just coming at it from different angles, isn't it? A result can't be a cause at the very same time it's a result. But a cause also, a result also disintegrates.
Yeah, I think for me, that idea that everything that's created, object or phenomenon, disintegrates.
That's right.
To actually accept that impermanence is obvious everywhere. Yeah.
So, so if you have an effect that disintegrates, you can infer that its causes also disintegrate. So you can go, so if the cause disintegrates, then you must know the result must also disintegrate.
Because not everything, you can have a cause without a result if the conditions aren't there for it to come to fruition, then it's not a cause.
That's not a cause.
Isn't it? Well, it's just a seed.
Depends on result. Vehicles.
There's a dependent relationship there.
So, is it the case that, like, anything that we call a result itself changes into something else, so therefore it's then it's a cause for some other result?
Most times that's the case,
right.
But not all the time. Because if you take, for instance, the result of Buddhahood,
right,
and you look at that and you go, okay, then we're going to have to go, No, I haven't heard. So Sandy just bought a couple of new terms for punch down or a punch up. I'm not quite sure what they mean. It's okay. We'll come to it after. So as you probably, even the Four Noble Truths is taught first. In terms of the, what they call it, the four seals, we also start with impermanence, don't we? Four noble truths, we start off with impermanence. I think the phenomena called the three marks of existence, I think using the Pali tradition. So they start off with impermanence as the first one.
But it's true, because people go through their lives thinking they're going to live forever.
Yeah.
And that's a fundamental mistake, isn't it?
That's just right. So one of the implications of knowing this is that, so recognizing impermanence actually reduces anxiety about loss and craving for stability. Because once you know there isn't any, you can give all that up.
It still pisses you off to accept it.
And it's still anxiety inducing because you've only got limited time to do stuff. It's going to run out soon.
Yeah, so sometimes impermanence is seen as a bad thing, but it's also, in fact, it's quite neutral.
Yeah.
You know, because if you think of it, it's not a bad thing that your anger decreases over time and diminishes and then falls away, does it? Isn't it? That's a good thing. So a change reveals the unsatisfactory nature of a conditioned existence. And grasping at what is changing to not change, this is a great source of suffering. Now, as I said, so impermanence has got two aspects. One's called gross or coarse, and the other is called subtle. So gross or coarse here just means easier to understand, more simpler than the subtle. So coarse impermanence, impermanence in terms of a continuum. So something stops. So in the case of this picture here, a life has stopped. And coarse impermanence means not remaining another moment like after death. So in terms of how easy this is to understand, it's like you were saying, if I was to just throw this cup up in the air, and it would fall on the ground, it would break. And that would be a demonstration of the impermanence of the cup. There is no cup anymore. There are broken pieces of a cup, but the cup ceases to exist. This is sort of quite straightforward. Another time you can see it, if you go into town and see all those big cranes, you know, they're knocking down buildings, all in, they're building buildings, aren't they? And either way, the change is going on. You're either building up something, change, or you're knocking something down. You see change again. Look, probably the one that's we are most, we're quite familiar with, but it's quite distressing, and that's often the death of somebody we hold dear. And so this is also, this is coarse impermanence. Their life has come to an end. And all of you often say, you know, every day we're all going to die. When it takes place, we behave in shock. So these are sort of things that we can get at quite straightforwardly. And what you'll see about coarse impermanence is that it's observable. So here we just, impermanence is sort of momentary. This refers, now we're sort of moving over now, to walking over towards the more subtle side. But momentary refers to not enduring for a second moment beyond the time of its occurrence. So this is really hard to sort of get your head around. You have to start to think about it. It's like something that's coming in, but as it's coming in, it's going out. Yeah, I've talked to you before about the idea of that Mission Impossible. You know, we used to see that. The guy would light up the fuse, and then the fuse starts, right? But while it's going down, the actual thing is disintegrating, isn't it? It looks like it's producing something, which it is, the light and all the sparks. But guess what? While it keeps going, it's dying. But as long as, it can only function as long as the fuse, right? As soon as that fuse is reduced to that, it's over. So it's, I like it. It's like, it looks like it's really producing something, which it is, isn't it? The light, the sparks. Right? But it's going out. And I heard something the other day about human beings, how we really need oxygen. But oxygen is the very same thing that ages us.
What exactly is it that's both, what is it that's impermanent? What actually is it?
Mm.
And you can't, like, no. You say at one point it's disintegrating, but at another point it's producing light. What are we talking about? What is the object we're talking about that is impermanent? It's like, if you try to find it, you
can't find it. No, that's right. Again, it's like, especially with subtle impermanence, you know, like you said. Yeah, that's right. It's not like a thing. And then it disintegrates.
Yeah.
It's quite a thing to think about. But then you're quite right, it leads right into emptiness. It's not emptiness, but it leads you there. Subtle impermanence does. Yeah, you can really see that there isn't anything sort of established, is it? If it's falling apart. But it's like coming in and going out at the very same time. So it changes our reality. And why? Because of dependence, because of dependency. And like you say, anything that's dependent is empty. So there are three principles which are all interconnected in the sequence. The fact of constant change, the reason for that change, which is dependency, and the freedom gained by internalizing the reality of this. So we observe gross change, aging. We can feel the stress of clinging to the fleeting moments, but also notice the lack of a solid self in the constant flow of thoughts. The suffering is not inherent in the events or in the event of impermanence. But suffering does arise from this sort of a cognitive error. And what the error is to mistake a dynamic, dependent process for a static, independent entity. And there's no doubt that all certainly looks like static in realism. Things don't look as if they're changing for most of us. So it's like Ian pointed out, so like change is not a problem to be solved. This is the nature of reality itself. This is what we've got to sort of relax into. So understanding impermanence, what should we understand? So if we can understand this subtle impermanence especially, this really does knock away the whole notion that things are permanent. And I remember two things I remember about this, the topic of impermanence. One was about a group of meditators who were studying impermanence. So for the first year, they do a three-year retreat. The first year is just, they just meditate on impermanence. And so what happened was one of the students in there who was not as well-versed or well-understood as some of the others were. Yeah, so he's looking at impermanence in the terms of death and impermanence. So death being this, you know, like it's the end, it's a sudden thing, it's obvious. So he's saying, look, I know things are impermanent, and I know that death exists and that I will die. It's making no difference to my mind at all. Right? And so one of the more senior meditators came to him and then taught him about subtle impermanence. And that made a big difference, right, when you can understand, when you sort of comprehended that. And so the idea of taking a year to meditate on impermanence, this is where the great value of knowledge of impermanence is, because what it does, it gives you a great deal of energy. Because you know, like you catch on pretty quickly. There's no real solid me here. Meditating, everything is like in flux. Everything is up for grabs, basically. So I've got to do something with this impermanent life I have. So, you know, the simple thing to take away from this is, and like I said, for a novice or a person like ourselves, like, you know, we should just say that nothing lasts forever. But this is a funny, you know, when you say it, isn't it? Like nothing seems like a thing. And this is what they're sort of getting at, actually, in the flow of impermanence, in the flux of impermanence, what are things with that? You have to say they're mere appearances again, aren't they? So even the thought, this is impermanent, this is impermanent. It's all changeable. Yeah, which will come to you soon. Does anybody remember a song by a group called Steely Dan called the Major Dude? She says, everything that comes together will fall apart again. Any major dude with half a heart will tell you that, my friend. Yeah, so I was like, wow. Yeah. So this group kind of in the 70s, and they also did a song called Bodhisattva. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what a Bodhisattva was. They said it again and again and again. I'm going, what's a Bodhisattva? Mm-hmm. It's a great song, too.
Yeah, yeah, the Beatles, maybe.
These guys are real cynical guys, these two guys, songwriters. Steely Dan, you know, if you look at the
didn't
lyrics.
Didn't they do She's a Devil Woman?
Anybody to do with half a heart will tell you, my friend, that whatever comes together will fall apart again.
Is it a happy song or a sad song?
No, it's just the truth.
Because there's the attitude to that. I mean, it's true, but there's the attitude.
Yeah, well, I take a happy attitude to that. In relationship to ourselves and our aggregates, well, our aggregates are impermanent because, as you know, they undergo a continuous momentary arising and disintegration. So again, everything that's assembled or produced is a constant process of change and disintegration from the gross to the most subtle level. And we can observe this truth in the aging of our bodies, or even in the changing of seasons, or even the shifting of your thoughts, and also in the fleeting nature of emotions. So So all these things, so it's quite nice watching these things. It all happens to us, it's just like we forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just comes and goes, it's like we don't sort of like add it up.
And while you're in those thoughts or emotions, they feel like they're going to go on forever.
That's right.
Or pain,
yeah.
Physical pain as well. You think it's not ending.
Yeah, that's right. We think it's not ending, but of course it is ending, isn't it? Yeah, so again, these sort of ideas about are sort of contrary to the reality of flux and change. So again, so in the rest of this picture, though, it's like seeing that you are not the same person that you were as a child. Yeah, this is impermanence, isn't it?
But you're
not realizing, so again?
You're not also completely different.
Oh, that's right. You're not completely different, but you're not exactly the same.
Or
it's also
sorry. Even a little bit the same.
No, that's right. Yeah, so our thoughts and feelings are always changing. Our age changes. So it shows that the self is a changing process. It's not a static thing. But again, it's quite interesting. Like if we're going to sit here, let's do it. It's a very interesting thing you can do is you just sit there and go, okay, I'm going to meditate on change. Right? I'm going to come familiar with what's changing inside me. Just do that and see what comes up, what happens. Okay, so this is, we'll start very simple. What external changes did you notice?
Yeah,
that's the most obvious one, isn't it? The sound. Getting lower, higher. Yeah, so we know that sound changed. It was an external thing. Sometimes cars will come, sometimes they move, so there's a difference in sound. Okay, now, what about your body? Did you notice any change in your body while you're sleeping? Maybe a twinge of pain. For me, I'm a little bit breathless at the moment, so I know I'm not getting as much air as I normally do. So it sort of like hurts a little. So, you know, I can notice that like this right there, there's a tightness, and then you can go from one thing to the next. So, you know, I know that. You guys too might notice any some change in your body. Then it comes to the mind. So while you're sitting there, what changes did you notice in your mind?
Something that was happening in my body.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly right. There's a change, right? Thoughts come and go.
Sometimes I'm not.
Yeah, that's right.
And I realize that
I
am, and
that
I'm not.
Okay. Now, what about the self? Do you notice the self change? No. See, this is the thing, it's really interesting. All these things change, but the person, the self, is not changing. Appears to not change, because it must be changing, right? So, yeah, interesting, eh?
You're like an omniscient observer.
Yeah, that's right. And it's always the same,
yeah,
though, isn't it?
Yeah, you're like
yeah,
outside
doesn't...
observing.
Yeah,
yeah
it's
maybe
right.
Inside. Yeah.
Yeah, and that seems to stay the same.
Yeah.
So when we think about impermanence, there's a number of different ways we can think about it. I put this picture up first because it has the change of destruction or the impermanence that when we see destruction. So when those buildings came down, you need an obvious change. Impermanence is obvious to your senses, you can see it like that. There's another impermanence in terms of cultural trends and attitudes. So, I don't know, maybe 100 years ago, there were very different ideas about the roles of women, for instance, right? And they've changed since. There's a lot of different ideas about culture too that has changed over time.
I mean, the really struggling part for me is that you're a bad person if you had a tattoo.
That's true, right?
Yeah. I know. Now, and
everyone's got very good Ian. Yeah. So Ian was just bringing up for those online how, in terms of cultural trends and attitudes, the proliferation of tattoos on people's skin that we see around today. But even in my time, in the 60s, that was the only sailors and
bikies,
and maybe people who hung around the pool hall. They were covered in tats, wasn't it? Or circus performers.
Yeah.
But they all had a little bit shady, aren't they? And I know my mum and dad never would want me to have a tattoo. No way. In fact, people that had them were thought to be bad people, basically. You know, they'd either come out of jail or something. Yeah, but that's, like I say, it changed completely. There's also the importance of separation. So again, like I said, whatever comes together will fall apart. So we will all be separated from our clothes and our belongings when we leave this life. But there are other separations, isn't there? Like you might have to suddenly go somewhere. So then now you're separated from your belongings. Another type of impermanence is what they call sudden impermanence, which basically refers to how circumstances can change very suddenly. Like I remember when I was hitchhiking up north, I used to look at the riverbeds and you just see all the sand. You go, oh, there's a good place to sleep.
Oh,
and that's a lot of good place to sleep. No way. Yeah. And so if you were to do this, you might be awoken to a sudden change. It might be the flash flood, it might be something grabbing your leg and pulling you down the river. This is Australia, right?
Yeah, apparently it's a.
So, Ian also brought up this idea of sudden change if you were to go like caving.
Yeah.
And then the weather changes up outside of your. In the earth, and you have no idea, and things can happen. And finally, there is many changes in nature. The nature of impermanence refers to the fact that everything that arises due to causes and conditions is transitory in nature. Whether we want it to be stable and predictable or wish it to change quickly, that changes its very nature. So another interesting thing I found about was organs, the organs that make up the body. Of course, they're all subject to change too, aren't they? But each of them is subject to different rates of change. Now, so some parts age quicker than other parts of the body. Well, I think it's maybe 7 to 8 years over that time, you have a completely new body. The body that you used to have is not the body you've got now. Everything's already changed. So these are just some of the ways we can acknowledge change. And a quote from the Buddha where he says, the three worlds are as impermanent as an autumn cloud. The birth and death of beings is like watching a dance. The passage of life is like lightning in the sky. It moves quickly, like a waterfall. So here, this quote you can see is made up of like four metaphors, isn't it? Or four similes. Each one is saying the three worlds are as impermanent as a water cloud, and so forth. So the three worlds. What are the three worlds? Anybody? Do you know what they are?
Past, present, future.
Oh, man, go ahead. That's pretty good.
Three realms,
form, formless, and desire realm. But that's a really nice one you put up, Madonna.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, the world of form, the formless world, and the desire world, or desire realm. Which
is the world. I was completely wrong.
Still, I like it. So,
times.
Yeah, three times. Thank you, Sandy. That's right.
I know three my numbers because I'm form, formless, and desire.
So the verse here deconstructs our illusion of stability by showing that existence itself, the beings within it, our lifespan and the flow of time are all fundamentally transient. Our experience is that we can feel life passing quickly, we can see generations come and go, and we can notice how even our environment is in a constant flux, like clouds shifting in the sky. So the core insight is a sense of spiritual urgency, and that is really why this topic of impermanence is important. Because, like I say, subtle impermanence goes into the growth from the media to death. Nothing is stable within the body. So we will pass from this life. So what are we going to do between then and now? Because as we know, like, samsara doesn't stop just because we die, just because everything is disintegrated. So the core insight is the sense of spiritual urgency, recognizing the swift and fleeting nature of this precious opportunity for awakening that cuts through complacency. So use this urgency to prioritize what is meaningful. Let go of trivial conflicts and distractions and focus on cultivating wisdom and compassion. So what I had this interesting thing the other day. Suddenly I just sitting there and talk, I listened to these, I could hear a conversation, and it's interesting because one person said to the other, how about we agree to not argue over trivial things?
No.
Oh, I thought, that's a great thing to say.
I can always remember my teacher in Townsville was a nun in Sydney, Chris Roberts, and she talked about her teacher and when she was young and she was, you know, studying under him in Sydney. Her and a friend would always want to go when the weather was good to go sandboarding.
Okay.
And her teacher always said, why are you sandboarding? So yeah. He'd always challenge her, why are you sandboarding? You've got other things to do.
So Ian, for those online, Ian was just telling us a story about a teacher and his students, and the students always wanted to go out sailboarding, and he was always asking them, why do you want to go sailboarding? There are more important things to do. And now this is this idea, isn't it? We forget our independence, we've got a long time to live, and we can go sailboarding, we'll do these other things tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, we do this all the time, isn't it? Or watch a movie rather than do this. I'll just sleep in a bit longer because, you know, whatever. So I've got plenty of time. But in fact,
and unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be getting any better with me, even though I'm getting older.
No, that's right. So which leads us to our interesting slide. You guys have anything to ask or offer?
Sorry.
Okay. These good things to think of.
Yeah, just like,
yeah.
Look, if I say this chair is impermanent,
yeah,
I was thinking about what's impermanent is my idea of being permanent. That's what's impermanent, is this static idea that that's what's impermanent.
We'll come to that.
So
I just material, I ended up just running down a whole lot of different questions. And so here's one. If every thought, feeling, and part of your body is constantly changing, what is the unchanging you that you're trying to protect from loss and pain? Well, the first thing I'm going to say is there is no unchanging me that I can protect from loss and pain, is there? But like it feels like, that's what I was saying, just here when we meditate on change, we do not seem to change. But our body and our mind and the external world did.
But it's a delusion we have of grasping at a self that we don't want to be changed or
calm. Yeah, well, grasping at a self can be permanent.
Yeah, yeah.
But in fact, it's just a name.
Yeah.
Imputed.
That's our delusion.
It's our delusion. It's grabbing. From the periphery. We grab it, we reify the self, then it's permanent. But in fact, it's not.
I don't know, aren't we just attempting to protect the possibility of there being a future us? Like if someone's coming at you with a knife, you kind of defend yourself because you want to live tomorrow.
Sure.
Whether that's the same me now or the tomorrow me, I just want there to be a tomorrow me.
Sure. But the me you're trying to protect now will not be the one that you've saved later.
No. Just as long as there's one, a one. Yeah, I suppose that's still a one though, isn't it? The dead one.
Pretty quiet.
But yeah, a disintegrating one.
Can I just say, well, what does exist is the mere eye.
Yeah, that's right. And the way that the mere eye exists is the same way that everything else exists.
Independence.
Independence upon conception, names and language.
Yeah. Not substantially.
Sorry?
Not substantially.
No, that's right. Not substantially, not essentially. Yeah, but merely, but that's enough. Mere is enough. You take any of the other ideas, they don't stand up to analysis, but merely does.
I just have a minute. When you were talking about throwing the cup before and breaking, and you say the cups are natural growth and earnings, could you also look at it like there's no longer the basis of designation to label a thing a cup because it's all.
It was the basis has been broken.
The basis has been broken, so there's no basis to label cupping.
That's right.
That's technical, like really getting.
Yeah, that's right. The basis has ceased to exist, so we can't call that phenomena a cup, so a cup no longer exists.
Right. Yeah, which is a, like very random, like a long-winded philosophical thing to say, but it's probably more accurate than saying the cup, there's no cup anymore. We can smash a cup.
There's a, what do you call it? There's a broken cup.
Yeah, broken.
Yeah, broken couples. Yeah. Okay, so here's our reason that establishes impermanence. So when you meditate on impermanence, you need to do it two ways. One is you actually need to know what it means, like what is impermanence. That's the first thing you need to know. And then you can look at all the different objects. So the subject, take a product. You usually know what a product is. What's a product, anybody? Basically.
Something that's created by cause.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so causal conditions produce products. It's something that's made up of parts.
Yes.
Take a subject, take a product, sorry. It is characterized by disintegration from the first moments of its existence. So any product, either comes together from causes and conditions, from the very first moment of its existence is characterized by this disintegration process, the process of disintegration. But why? Reason, because. Because it arose from its own causes, which have the essential nature of disintegration, without relying on some ultimate cause of disintegration. So, for instance here, if we had a bridge, a bridge is a product. It is subject, it's saying here, to disintegration from the very first moment it was built. And you go, why? It says, because it arose from its own causes, with the essential nature of disintegration, without relying on some ultimate cause of disintegration. So if you have this bridge here, if we just left it alone, it would disintegrate over time. Over time, become there to be no bridge there. An ultimate cause of disintegration of that bridge would be what?
A meteor.
Yeah, that's right. Or dynamite or something like that, a meteor or dynamite, that'll do it, right? It doesn't require that. That's what I'm sort of saying. The bridge does not require dynamite or a meteor to disintegrate. It will disintegrate on its own. You go, why? Because everything that produced it was disintegrated. So when you say
because it arose from its own causes.
Yeah.
So what follows from that is that it doesn't exist from causes unrelated to itself.
That's true. That's right. That's so exactly right. That's right.
God didn't make it.
But here we go. Now, subtle impermanence, right? Against momentariness. Gee, I wonder if I did a funny thing there. And not remaining for the time of the first moment. Made our view against momentariness. Now, So understanding subtle impermanence prepares the mind for insight into selflessness, which is a direct antidote to ignorance. Now, again, the major differences between gross impermanence and subtle impermanence is this. Gross impermanence can be apprehended or known by you through your senses. You can see a seed change. We can see people get older. It's obvious to us, right? We know about change. Subtle impermanence, you can't get at it directly. You have to infer it. So that's what that reason was, is inference. We infer from the gross something else about it, which is that phenomenon is changing anyway. It doesn't require anything else to make a change. And we come down to subtle impermanence. So like a candle flame that appears steady but constantly transforms, each momentary flicker arises and vanishes in the same causal flow. No two moments are identical, yet the flame persists as a continuum of impermanence. Just like us. We are continuums of impermanence, aren't we? So by understanding this subtle disintegration, we align ourselves with the wisdom of dependent arising. Seeing phenomena as dynamic processes rather than static entities. You know, so again, with subtle impermanence here. So imagine like you have a seed. You plant that seed, you have the supportive of all the conditions of soil and warmth and so forth. What will happen over time? To that seed.
It will change.
It will change out. Until what happens?
Sprout comes up.
Is the seed there at the time of the sprout? Is the seed there at the time of the sprout?
Yeah.
No. And the seed is transformed into the sprout. The seed no longer exists. Then, when the sprout grows up bigger, then what happens?
Tree.
It becomes a tree again. You look back as a seed there. Yeah, no. So the cause has to vanish before the effect is produced. Causes can't remain while the effect is present.
But this is what I was saying earlier. The effect becomes a cause that then changes into another effect.
Yes.
In a continuum, yeah.
In a continuum.
Sure.
That's why it's always changing.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why it's impermanent.
Every effect is impermanent just as the causes.
Yeah.
That's right. So we see it, and we get the seedling, it changes too. It becomes a bit stronger, it might be like a little shoot or a little plant. So then the shoot is gone, hasn't it? So is the seed. Because those things are causes for the next moment. So they must fall away. They can't be present at the same time, one phenomenon, and the cause is there and the effect.
Even the DNA changes.
The DNA changes. Yeah,
it
of course. Imagine if it doesn't.
What about human DNA? Don't we have the same?
If it doesn't change, just think about it. Think about it.
Everything changes.
Everything. It's a product. It has to change. Yeah. People think atoms stay the same. They don't.
No, they don't.
None of these things. They're all
dependent. But surely there has to be some degree of a blend of permanence and impermanence, because if there wasn't, things would be just like...
What was it?
There's some element of permanence.
Constancy.
You've got to, again, this really depends upon the definitions. If you use the term permanence, that means no change.
Right.
But if you had things were impermanent and there's just total change, I'd be turning into a rainbow, into a frog, into...
But you can't. Why? Because the conditions aren't there. You need more of a cause. This is the thing. Causes themselves aren't enough to produce an effect. You need the conditions, and the conditions are changing too.
Why can someone recognize me now from when I was 15? there must be some degree of sameness there for that to happen.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you what it is, Ben. The sameness is your name. That never changed, did it?
In a crowd, someone could recognize, oh, that's Ben.
Sure, as they knew Ben before.
Yeah, what do you think,
Mike? Yeah, so, or your voice.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, also the other day, and the person said, I didn't recognize you, but I recognized your voice. Because I was just looking around going, gee, I hope I can recognize this person for a long time. And I walked right past her. Then I spoke and she was Eddie. That's not absolutely
permanent. But everything's not absolutely permanent either. When I said permanent, I wasn't saying it's absolutely permanent. So
no, no, I'm not saying it's absolutely permanent. What's the definition of permanence?
It doesn't change.
That's right.
But what about continuums? And what is a continuum of something?
A continuum doesn't mean it's permanent.
It's like it's halfway between
permanent. Again, it depends upon how you use the word permanent. Right. Yeah. So there's, in fact, the other traditions, other than the Galupa, use permanent in the way that you're talking about. Right? And the Buddhists, from our side, we know that. So we don't hop on them and say, hang on a minute. Right. Da, 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 da. So we know you guys are using permanence in this way.
Right.
So all of this is conventional truth that we're talking about.
Yeah, right? It's not permanent.
Well, if we're into a real cause, we're talking about, it's a substantial cause.
Substantial.
Right? So substantial causes are impermanent.
Something else.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why we have a seed of an acorn turn into an acorn tree.
Yes.
The substantial cause is that seed, and it is impermanent. It's subject to change, and it did change, didn't it? And out of its change, it produced this tree.
But it didn't turn into an apple tree.
No, of course not. Because that's what you're saying then. That's why you don't turn into something else. It's just think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Adherence and concordance.
People just about go around changing into rainbows.
Or frogs.
Put some thought into this.
Yeah, so.
People in Portland turn into frogs.
They certainly did.
And unicorns.
So what's sort of. What do you want to ask about this or add to it? It's basically, we're covering a number of three things. One is subtle impermanence. We've got gross impermanence. That's object. We can observe that with our senses. Subtle impermanence, you have to use reasoning to get at. But that is not obvious to our senses. Why do we want to know this? It's what they call the foundation for urgency. You have to understand we can die. We will die. We are going through the changes right now. So recognizing impermanence is a foundation, of urgency to engage in your path. Not only that, but subtle impermanence is telling you or leading you to the understanding that phenomena are empty. They have no intrinsic nature at all. So like I said, with subtle impermanence, you can't, it's very difficult to find the object, isn't it? And it's not like an object, there's an object there, although from conventional point of view, ordinary way of looking at things, we can say this cup is disintegrating, right? And I am getting older. All of this is true, but if you sort of think about it, so now you're asking, now this question is not about the conventional reality, about me getting older. Now you're asking about an intrinsically existing me, and no such self will get older. Yeah, so again, it's tricky, eh? Like, you remember, I don't know, maybe you're not there, Ben, but we up at CI not too long ago, was the teacher that came?
Jada
Rinpoche, right? So he gave this warning to people about when you do the analysis on emptiness, right? To not knock out the conventionally existing person.
Right.
And this is a way of going that. So what are you? Are you the body or are you the mind? So this sort of thing. You know, you gotta remember, well, when we talk about ourselves as being the body or the mind, that's a conventionality. It's conventionally accepted. We talk about ourselves like that, others accept it, but this is not the way to go. So you've got to remind them what we're going to refute here is not the conventional self or the conventional body, but an intrinsic self or an intrinsic body. So that's what's to be negated. Otherwise, we just get too loose about this. It's really easy to, you know, like get into trouble, aren't it? But like if you just move along like that, then I follow along and went with you, and you suddenly you negate, and I go, hang on, what? Yeah, but like I say, so if you look at that, now you're going to look for what?
Something that inherently exists.
Yeah, and nothing does. Yeah, that's right. Well, no, it doesn't exist. That's the thing. If it were findable, you should find it using the analysis, right? Because you are looking for an inherently existing self that is impermanent. If you don't find it, that means it doesn't exist. It's not that you just don't find it. It doesn't exist. The analysis is to find it. And the not finding it is the empty of that inherent nature or whatever it is. Okay, here's probably the more interesting part, the delusions part, right? So delusions. Again, remember, delusions disintegrate from the very first moment of their existence. Why? Because they arise from their own causes, which are the essential nature of disintegration. Really easy to forget this. It's like the same form, Donna, right? So I mean, when stuff happens to us, like it seems permanent. It seems like it's going to take a long time. But in fact, this is like the foundation of valid delusions. So now, let's have a look at these delusions. Right? So how can impermanence oppose hatred? So I'll give you a chance to get at this one, right? So hatred is made up of three parts, simply speaking. There is somebody who has to experience hatred. They have to meet up with an object that you can feel hatred towards. Yeah? And then there's the activity of hatred itself, this affliction, hatred. So there's me. So if you're talking between Ian and I, right? And I don't like Ian. I'm supposedly hating him. So here's me, the person who hates Ian. There is Ian as the object of my hatred, and there is a disturbing emotion of hatred. So we've got three of them there, right? So the first thing you're going to do is look around and go, okay, who is the me that has experienced this hatred? How do I appear to exist? I appear as if I existed intrinsically or inherently. This is a me that feels this thing, right? Now remember, this inherentness is based on an I that does exist. We have a conventional I, but it's being inflated. So it appears to be more than just the name I. And I look at Ian, and Ian appears to be more. Just a person called Ian.
Slim down
thing there. Dance, that is. That's right. So now I grab Ian as being really intrinsically existent. Right? And now, it depends on, now I have the emotion of hatred. So when you feel hatred, there's only two ways you can do it, isn't there? If hatred exists intrinsically. So what I'm going to get out of here, the way to do this is you analyze yourself to see if you actually have any intrinsic nature, or analyze the object of my hatred to see if it had any intrinsic nature, and I'd analyze hatred itself to see if it had any intrinsic nature. You see that none of these objects has any intrinsic nature whatsoever. Because everything is impermanent, it's all in flux. Yeah, you can't. The other side, you can't stand in the same river twice. You're not, yeah, so impermanence really helps here, but it leads to the selflessness. So, you know, so here's some ways of dealing with anger in terms of your actual thing. Right? So you know how we often say, well, people say, oh, man, I'm so angry. Better say, and this is more realistic, this feeling of anger will pass. But because you are not anger. Again, you know, you do this analysis. Are you angry? No, I am angry sometimes. I experience anger sometimes. Does the anger come or go? Does it stay?
Sometimes it feels like a very long time.
Yeah, it does. But actual fact is a very short moment of time. But how we experience it, I think it's, if we can riddle, I think Carrie said, what is it? What's the time? 15 minutes?
90
seconds, some really small period of time. And all you have to do is relax. Relax and be present and it will go. So what makes it remain is basically our grasping at it with our own wrong ideas. Like you say, we think it's much more than this fleeting phenomenon, it's transient. Yeah, so deconstruct the object of hatred. This approach views the object of anger not as a static entity, but as a transient process which distinguishes it from moral judgments that fix a person's character. Its significance is in shifting focus from a reified enemy to a dynamic, conditioned being, making compassion possible. Remember that time when Kari said, imagine if Ian was angry, right? And then we looked and said, wow, there's a really angry guy. Man, Ian's a really angry guy. Right? However, what if one of us said, man, Ian suffers a great deal? But we have a very different relationship with Ian, then, wouldn't we? Instead of being averse to him every time we see him, oh man. Now we might be really concerned about him instead. Deconstruct the affliction itself. Impermanence is applied to the feeling of anger, unlike approaches that simply try to suppress or ignore it. This reveals anger as a conditioned, temporary mental event, not an essential part of the mind. So again, you say the feeling of anger will pass like a storm cloud that comes and goes. Hatred is an adventitious affliction. It's not the mind's essential nature of luminous clarity. And finally, for the advanced practitioner, observing the momentary arising and ceasing of the affliction prevents identification with it. And that's that whole thing of what you're saying a minute ago about being the observer. And Corey's only like, we start off in the realm of the body, but then we move it up to the emotional and mental states and aware and don't do anything. Just watch them. They just fall apart. They cannot. And they require conditions to support them. And if you pull them away, this thing can't stand. Yeah, so that idea, like I said, there's a great point of how we cause ourselves suffering, where it's not the other, it's us. And most of it comes from this unskillful way we use our speech, I think. Unskillful thinking and then unskillful use of speech, where we talk to ourselves. We're not very clear or specific. So like I said, the three ways where you can investigate the object of your anger. You can investigate yourself as a subject who is angry. And then you can investigate anger itself or hatred here. So I wanted to put up hatred because there are a few different funny things with anger. Hatred is straightforward. So how do you think you work against attachment then? It's the same process. Mm. You just do the same thing. You realize that object of my attachment is impermanent, subject to change. I myself, who love the subject, will change my mind 3 years from today. I will no longer love it. And in the object itself, you know what they often say, like love requires work. You can't just say, yeah, I love someone, it's done. No, they want to do more than that. And you have to do more than that, isn't it? It's not just like out there on its own, it's all covered, it's good. So again, these afflictions are impermanent, the objects are impermanent, the subjects are impermanent. And especially if you come down to the subtlest thing, you've got to go like, gee, what am I actually getting at here? So meditating on impermanence, you know, the stabilizing meditation that stops this grasping of permanence where there is none. Why? Because you're going to rest the mind on the impermanent or the empty nature. The analysis undermines the grasping. So what we do is undermine first, and then just rest the mind on. Rest your mind on that impermanent nature. Rest your mind on the lack of permanence. And then, of course, then what we do is we take this and walk around and go, now I'm alive, but I'm impermanent. I've got to do something meaningful with this life I have before it comes to an end. So this great master, Patrul Rinpoche, said, impermanence is everywhere, yet I still think things will last. I've reached the gates of old age, yet I still pretend I'm young. Bless me and misguided beings like me, that we may truly understand impermanence. You've got a lot of lovely verses in there, and others love them to go, that's, he's talking to me. So this is interesting. So this verse articulates the fundamental human conflict between the intellectual acceptance of impermanence and the deep-seated emotional habit of grasping at permanence. It's a candid admission of cognitive dissonance, knowing change is universal while living as if personal exceptions exist. The final line is an aspiration to transform this conceptual knowledge into liberating wisdom, bridging the gap between what the mind knows and what the heart truly accepts.
Is it from?
This verse? No, this is my creator using the AI. No, I didn't. The AI did. This is my special prompt. Yeah, it comes up with some beautiful stuff, that's for sure. That's right. Yeah. So the verse signifies a moment of clear self-awareness, recognizing the internal resistance to the truth of impermanence. We feel this as a subtle denial of aging when looking in the mirror, or the shock of loss despite knowing everything exists. Now, the suffering is not caused by impermanence itself, but by our pretending that it does not apply to us. This pretense is a form of ignorance. This terrific writing, eh, from an AI. You're doing good. Hey, it's telling me it's correct. And this is that the verse itself is the action, turning this painful insight into a sincere aspiration to align one's view with reality. So in summary, we know things change, but we live in denial. That's about it, isn't it? Yeah, so true understanding of impermanence bridges this gap between the intellect and lived experience. And acknowledging this gap between belief and behavior is the first step towards wisdom. It fosters self-honesty and reduces the shock of loss. This insight encourages us to align our actions with reality, leading to greater peace and less self-deception. So you ask the AI to come up with a question for me, you know, in terms of application. So it says, in what small way am I pretending today? And how might I gently face this reality? What am I pretending that things will last? I'll see you tomorrow. It's like that, isn't it? Just like that.
Who?
I'll put that in my diary.
Yes. We've come to the end, so I'm just going to do this as our last meditation, right? So, sitting comfortably, your posture's correct, your back is straight, and shoulders are relaxed. Just lift your awareness, settle on the simple rhythm of the breath as the body breathes itself. So the meditation is to close the gap between knowing that things change and truly feeling it within the heart. So set a motivation whereby we will altruistically explore impermanence, but not as a sad fact, but as one of the keys to freedom. So impermanence, this single insight reveals that all things, our thoughts, feelings, and self are in constant flux. Realizing this dismantles the painful grasping at what is fleeting. This painful grasping of what is fleeting is one of the roots of suffering. So the insight into impermanence is much like a master key that can unlock chains of attachment, open the prison cell of resentment, and the gilded cage of self-identity, revealing all of them to be built within the same illusory fortress of permanence. So how does the key of impermanence unlock the prison of resentment? One shows that anger, the other, and the wronged self are all temporary, dissolving like the prison walls. So why does impermanence release the chains of attachment? Well, it shows again that attachment, the other, and the self that feels that are all temporary. We cannot chain ourselves to a flowing river. Impermanence reveals that everything is part of a transient flow. So what does it feel like to unlock the cage of self-identity? So impermanence is a release into wider space. You're no longer defined by fleeting roles or feelings. Just for two more breaths, watch the flow of your breath. Your breath is a direct teacher of gentle change. So impermanence is one of the master keys to profound and lasting freedom. The Buddha taught it in his very first teaching, and he taught it in his very last teaching. And we too quickly come to understand, to realize that all phenomena that are produced are subject to suffering impermanence. Breathe in through your nostrils. Exhale. So our takeaway, so we can at least take this away. We should know every product is changing. There's not many things that don't change. There's only three or four according to the Dharma. So yeah, four things is not a lot to hold permanent, you see. Everything else is imperfect. And you can use this knowledge to help yourself stop clinging to the things that are subject to change. I was laughing from how, you know, parents sometimes say, but you've changed so much. Oh, you've changed. So, yeah. Okay. So some meditations on this section called Meditations. So page 16 and 17, if you have a look at those. Next week, we're going to look at making the practice your own. But here, it's really we're going to be looking at perfect human rebirth. Will be the main topic for meditation. So I just say thank you again for being here, and for those of you online, thank you. So due to the merits and the transactions, may I quickly attain the state of the world. I lead all living beings without exception to that enlightened state. May the supreme through all bodies be known, not in all the rise and grow. May the world have no decline, but increase by the more. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. And for as long as his long life, the wish man, the wish for the materials, the source of every single benefit and happiness in this world. To the inquiry kind, to the gesso and speech, may all your holy wishes be for the happiness of this world. And finally, the prayer for Rinpoche is recognition and finding. In whole, we spread the Guru's precious and complete teachings for exploration and practice. We award the armor of patience and the other discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, to you, I make this request.